Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
This is The Planted Runner. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik. One of the many wonderful things about running is that it's really good for your heart. The word cardio comes from the Greek meaning heart, and running is one of the best forms of cardio you can do. So it makes sense that we can look to our hearts and our heartbeats to help us understand our running better. A stronger heart can pump out more blood in fewer beats, so you can run faster and longer with less effort. Many runners rely almost exclusively on their heart rate to tell them how hard or how easy their runs are, and some even plan their entire training around heart rate zones. The only problem is, well, heart rate training is problematic. So why do so many runners use it, and should you? Let's find out. Welcome to The Planted Runner. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and my mission is to help you improve your running, your mindset, and your life with science-backed training and plant-based nutrition. Today, I'm joined with one of my favorite running coaches, Elizabeth Scott from Running Explained. She's done an entire masterclass on the topic of heart rate training, which you can find a link for in the show notes. We'll go over the pros and cons of heart rate training, how you can determine your max heart rate without going to a lab, and she explains why common formulas and heart rate zones might be more confusing than helpful. If you've ever struggled with keeping your heart rate low on an easy run or wondering if it's getting too high on a workout, we'll get into the heart of the matter in this episode. Before we get into it, I'd like to remind you about our monthly Apple Podcast Review Contest. All you need to do is write a 5-star review, and one lucky runner will receive free access to one of my online running classes. Reviews are truly the easiest and most impactful way of helping this show, and I choose a new winner every month. Don't forget to stay tuned all the way to the end of the episode for another Mental Strength Minute. Fortify your mind in 60 seconds or less. And now, here's my conversation with Elizabeth Scott. Welcome to The Planted Runner, Elizabeth.
I'm excited to be here, Claire. Thanks for having me back.
Of course, of course. So we are going to talk about what shouldn't be a controversial subject, but I think it actually is, heart rate training. So let's just talk all about the basics first. When people say they are training by heart rate, what does that actually mean?
Ah, such a good question. And I think I agree with you. It's a topic that seems to be controversial, mostly because I think it's misunderstood by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But broadly speaking, when we talk about using heart rate in training, we're talking about using our heart rate, our beats per minute during a run as an understanding of where we are along the intensity spectrum. And if we know enough about our individual heart rate and where our intensity zones are, and we'll talk about that in a minute, we can get a really good understanding of where we are in the intensity of, am I training in the right intensity zone for my run today? And that's such a valuable tool for runners because a lot of us are really focused on things like pace and, well, mostly pace, really focused on pace, but sometimes only focusing on pace can lead us to make kind of ill-informed decisions about training too hard or not hard enough. And heart rate is a really good way of understanding how hard your body's actually working and help you make really good decisions in training about, am I working at the right intensity on this day?
Yeah, because it can be challenging if you just say, okay, go out for an easy run, go out for a medium run, go out for a hard run. What does that mean? So if we get a number, that's why we love pace as runners, because it's like, okay, run 10 minute per mile. Great. I can look at my watch and I know I'm doing the job. And heart rate can be like that too. Okay, go run at 140 beats per minute. I can do that. But what's the problem with saying, okay, go run at, I don't know, 140 beats per minute?
Yeah. So the thing about heart rate and using heart rate in training is that heart rate is relative, not absolute. Claire, you and I, even if we had the exact same level of fitness and the exact same PRs, which I know we don't, but let's pretend that we do. For me, I would love to pretend that. Even if we were to go out and run at the exact same intensity zone, at the exact same pace, it's more than likely that you and I would have slightly different heart rates in that same intensity and pace zone. And this is because heart rate is very individual per person. So although we can draw conclusions about population averages and say, well, in general, somebody who is a man who is 35 on average will have this maximum heart rate, and then we can infer what their zones might be, that is not individual for the actual person. And so you can have two people, same age, same everything, who have vastly different actual heart rates. And that's why saying, well, everybody should be running at this heart rate to stay in this zone is completely wrong, because you can have people running at the same heart rate and they can be in two completely different intensity zones. So that's the biggest misconception about heart rate training, is that there is one very specific heart rate that we should be aiming for. And then, of course, one of the other biggest issues with heart rate is that most people don't actually have their known heart rate data. So they're not measuring it correctly, or they're using an age-based formula and assuming it's correct. So where people really get confused using heart rate in training is that they're already starting with information that isn't accurate and individualized to them. And then the confusion and frustration just kind of compounds. And then we get people saying, this is so frustrating to me. I don't understand it. It's worthless. I'm going to do something else instead. And that's fine. Heart rate's one tool in training, but to use it properly, you got to do a couple steps to make it work for you.
Yeah. Because the formula you're talking about, the one that everybody uses, is 220 minus your age. That should be your maximum heart rate. But that means every 35-year-old has the same max heart rate, which cannot be true. Correct.
Yeah, correct. And it's interesting. There's a really fabulous paper that was published in 2020 that I highly encourage, if anybody's interested in looking at what the formulas, how they come up with these age-based formulas. There are these beautiful, really simple charts and graphs in this study that you can look at and say, oh, now I understand. It's called Accuracy of Commonly Used Age-Predicted Maximal Heart Rate Equations, which I know is a very dry title, right? But essentially what it says is it looks at the most common, I think it's like 9 or 12 age-based formulas, because there's more than one. 220 minus age is the most common one. It's called the Fox formula. There's a bunch of different other age-based equations, age-based estimates that take into account different little factors here and there. But by and large, they are still looking at the best fit for a population average, which means that you're going to have a ton of people who are going to be either above or below that average. And so when we're assuming that that age-based estimate is an absolute value that's true for everybody, we are leaving a bunch of individualization on the table, which can lead to frustration and inaccuracy down the road.
Mm-hmm. And in adding on to that, there are so many factors that influence heart rate, that if you go out on a run today, it might be very different than your run yesterday. You know, if you and I are going for a run, we're the exact same person, and I had more caffeine, I had more coffee in the morning, we're going to have different heart rates, right?
So interestingly enough, caffeine is something where there is some mixed research on this as to whether caffeine actually elevates, has no effect, or potentially decreases your heart rate, depending on how you respond to caffeine, what intensity zone that you're in. So actually right off the bat, that's one of the things where it's another misconception about things that can affect heart rate. And that, yes, for some people, if you're drinking enough caffeine, it could be that your heart rate is raised by caffeine, which is a stimulant. But for some people, actually, and they've done research on this, it has no effect on their heart rate during exercise. And for some people, they may actually experience a slight decrease in heart rate relative to a non-caffeinated state. So yes, you're correct in saying there are a ton of factors that influence what your heart rate could be on a run. There are also things like dehydration, sleep status, your stress levels, how hot it is, how humid it is. All these things can influence heart rate. So there are going to be people for whom heart rate is a more useful tool than others. So if you are, for example, taking a medication which you know impacts your heart rate, like certain stimulant medications or certain heart medications like beta blockers, maybe heart rate training isn't going to be as useful for you. But by and large, it is still a very helpful tool for many people as long as you know what you're looking for.
Okay, so what are we looking for? If we can't if we can't use those formulas because we're all on the bell curve somewhere, how do we find our zones? And what are these zones anyway? What is our max heart rate? The zones we're supposed to be in? Everybody's talking about zone two. What does that mean? Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about it. So let's back up and we're going to talk about the zones first. Then we'll talk about how you can find them. So everybody at this point has a wearable device, right? Let's just assume it's a Garmin or it's an Apple Watch or it's a Coros or whatever it is. You are most likely wearing a digital smart device that has an optical heart rate sensor. And so when you exercise, when you run, when you bike, when you swim, and you're recording that, it's also recording your heart rate data. And so what happens is your watch is using that data. It's also using some things like your age that you have programmed to your profile. It's coming up with this, hey, here are your heart rate zones. Now, most commonly available wearable devices have what's called a standard 5-zone heart rate model in that it contains 5 zones, right? This is, I'd say, too much information for most runners. Yes. The 5-zone model is confusing for a lot of people, because actually we only really care about 3 major intensity zones. You really only have 3 zones. So why is a 5-zone model one of the most common ones? I don't know. I did not make that decision. I was not in the room in that planning meeting. But what we really care about is when you simplify this, we have to understand that we are targeting 3 basic intensity zones in our training. Our low intensity zone. So this is also called our easy effort zone. In a 5-zone heart rate model, this is zones 1 and 2. This is the zone that occurs below our aerobic threshold. Mm-hmm. Your aerobic threshold is the top, or is the top of your aerobic zone. It's the physiological point at which you go from burning mostly fat and using oxygen, mostly oxygen to create energy, so very little byproducts, to above that inflection point, you're starting to burn more carbohydrate, especially anaerobically. So you're starting to accumulate more lactate, produce more hydrogen ions. And then as intensity rises through that second zone, we hit the top of that second zone. It's called our lactate threshold, or also our anaerobic threshold. Mm-hmm. And this is the inflection point between moderate and high intensity exercise, when we essentially go from burning, still burning a lot of energy, or producing a lot of energy aerobically, to producing a lot of energy anaerobically. This is the point where essentially your output goes from sustainable, moderately sustainable, to unsustainable. Mm-hmm. Above your lactate threshold, you are running on borrowed time. And then at the very top of this, you have your maximal ability, and this is where your maximum heart rate is. So the first thing you need to understand is that if you are not accurately able to measure your heart rate in training, heart rate's a useless tool for you. The problem is that a lot of people assume that the optical sensor that comes with their watch, Apple Watch, Garmin, whatever it is, they assume that it's accurate. We know that optical sensors for running specifically are prone to inaccuracy and you cannot trust them. This is not to say they're wrong all the time, but when you run, as we know, high impact sport, you are hitting the ground footstep, you know, every couple times a second. And what happens is your watch's optical sensor can get confused by the vibrations, the data, the spike generated by each footstep. And it can experience something called cadence lock, when it confuses your heart rate for your cadence. And this can lead to artificially high readings. Mm-hmm. So first off, if you are not using something like a chest strap or an optical armband sensor, not wrist-based, armband sensor, which is shown to be pretty much as accurate as a chest strap, don't bother using heart rate in training. Mm-hmm. Why would you use something that you know you can't rely on the measurement for? So first off, that's a thing you need to understand. If you're going to use hard entry, you have to have an accurate measurement device. Mm-hmm. The next thing you need to understand is that you need to find your actual maximum heart rate or your lactate threshold heart rate. And both of those, or one or the other, can be observed in field testing. So you don't need to go to a sports lab, although you can. And if you have the opportunity to do that, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah.
You can find your maximum heart rate in something like a graded exercise test or running an all-out 5K or even an all-out mile time trial. So this is something that you can determine for yourself. What is the maximum heart rate, the maximal ability for my body to work? What is that? And once you have your actual accurate measurement device, and once you know your actual maximum heart rate, or conversely, your lactate threshold heart rate, that's a slightly different field test, then you can say, now that I have these two tools, now I can start to use these common zone setups to then estimate where my specific zones are.
Right. Right. So for the maximum heart rate test, we want to do something where we are running really hard for a good chunk of time, not just a minute, but a good chunk of time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, somewhere in that range, until the point where you are ready to stop and you are breathing really, really hard and your lungs are burning a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
your maximum heart rate, it's really hard. Maximum heart rate is not something you can sustain for a long time. And so when I hear people say, oh, my watch said I was in zone 5, I was at my maximum heart rate for 20 minutes. I'm like, no you weren't. That's impossible. You cannot sustain your maximum heart rate for really any meaningful amount of time. But yes, it's a very, very, very high intensity endeavor. This can be tested as something like you said, like a 5 to 10 minute time trial, like an all out mile or a 3K. I always like to say, if you've recently raced a 5K and felt like you were to puke at the end, you've probably approached your maximum heart rate. You can also do this in a graded exercise test by doing sustained hill repeats. But the point is that you are looking for the top of your heart's ability to beat.
Right.
And there's huge variation. Some people have a maximum heart rate in the low 200s, 205, 210, 215. I worked with an athlete who had a lab tested maximum heart rate of 222 beats per minute.
Oh,
now, she's
God.
An outlier.
How old?
Mid 20s.
Wow. Okay.
I know. And also, that's a good question because yes, your maximum heart rate does decay with age. So everybody's maximum heart rate will decline over time, but at different rates. And there's a lot of other factors here, which is another reason the age-based stuff isn't as accurate. So it's a maximal test. Now, here's the caveat. Because testing your maximum heart rate is such a high intensity endeavor, this is not going to be a safe option for every runner. If you are not able to handle that high intensity, like if you have any questions, like you maybe want to do this with a friend or, you know, with somebody who can be with you in case, you know, I don't know, pass out, like this is a really high intensity thing. This is a situation where I'd say, well, how about we start with that age-based formula as a guesstimate, and then over time work up to the point where we can then proceed to that maximal heart rate test. But yes, you finding your maximum heart rate in training is doable, but it's going to require a little bit of suffering on your part.
Yeah. Yeah. I think actually people are more interested in the opposite end of the scale. A lot of people use heart rate to make sure they're running easy enough. We all know for long distance running, we need to have a lot of time in the aerobic zone, that low intensity zone under the aerobic threshold. We want to stay right about there to build up this huge aerobic engine. And let's face it, most runners run too fast on their easy days. So they say, okay, well, in order to know that I'm running slow enough on my easy days, I'm going to use heart rate. And so where do people trip up there?
Yes, this is where people get very frustrated and very confused. I will say I find heart rate to be an incredible tool to keeping us honest on our easy days. So we're not focusing on things like pace. So we can say, yes, I accomplished what I was supposed to on this day. I stayed in my easy zone as measured by heart rate. But here's the thing. What I hear from runners who say, I can't run in zone 2. Every single time that I run, my heart rate, I can be here for a little bit and then my heart rate, you know, rises rapidly or rises slowly, and I essentially can't stay in zone 2. And now, I want to back up here for a second and say zone 2 is the name for that second zone in our five-zone heart rate model. But depending on the heart rate model that we're using, a three-zone, a five-zone, a seven-zone, a 10-zone, right? That zone could be called different things, but it's describing the same intensity zone, which is that zone, like you said, Claire, right below our aerobic threshold. We want to be spending a lot of our training time. So zone two is just what we're calling it. But what you need to know is this: your aerobic zone. This is the low intensity zone below your aerobic threshold. So why can't we hang out in zone two the way that we want to, or the way that we're supposed to? The most common issues I see with this is, one, you're assuming that your watch is correct. Your watch's optical sensor is correct. So if you are going to be using heart rate in training and you're only using your watch, don't bother. Go buy a chest strap, go buy an armband. Like, it's not going to be worth it because you can't rely on it. You can't assume it's accurate. Two, you are assuming that the zones that your watch is giving you are set up properly. This may or may not be the case. The thing about your aerobic threshold is that it is a trainable attribute, meaning that it can be improved through training over time. Although there are some genetic variations that, you know, indicate whether somebody would have a lower or a higher natural ability for their aerobic threshold. When we talk about aerobic threshold as a percentage of your maximum heart rate, which is how we typically set up our zones, a percent of heart rate, percent of maximum heart rate. A standard five-zone heart rate model has zone two set up between 60 and 70% of your maximum heart rate. Now, for somebody who has a very, very poor fitness status, their aerobic threshold could be as low as 60%. They could be already hitting that aerobic threshold as low as 60% of their maximal ability. But for a very highly trained runner, they could have an aerobic threshold that's 80 or 85% of their maximum rate. So already we can see the generic zone fails us. For a lot of people, even with a moderate training status, that generic zone two is set too low. So why am I always in zone three? I'm fully conversational. I can sing a song. Well, if the generic zone is what you're relying on, it just could be that your zones aren't like set up properly for you in your in the model that you're using. All you have to do is go into your app and change it. The other thing that I typically see here is that you actually just need to slow down more or take more walk breaks in order to stay in that low intensity zone. Because so few runners actually are able to spend meaningful amounts of time here, a lot of runners essentially have a very poor aerobic capacity. You may have a pretty robust, moderate or high intensity. You can run 10 miles, no problem. You can probably race, moderate, middle distances in quotes for long distance runners like the 10K.
Yeah.
But as soon as you try to stay in zone two, you essentially have to slow way down because you haven't developed your aerobic capacity yet. So these issues can also kind of compound together. But so yeah, the three most common or the most common things that I see is that your measurement is wrong. your zones aren't set up properly, or you actually just need to slow down more than you think that you do.
We'll be back with more right after the break.
Women's Running Stories, where we explore the intersection between running and life. Because every woman who is committed to a running journey has a story to tell, and this is where you'll find those stories. I am host and producer Cherie Louise Turner. I'm a 53-year-old runner, and together with original music by musician and runner Cormac O'Regan, we bring these inspirational stories to life. Please join us to fuel your adventures.
There is no hood like parenthood. When you meet a fellow parent, you just kind of get each other on a whole nother level. Hi, I'm Kanika Chanda Gupta. I'm a former CNN journalist, mom of three, including twins, and host of That's Total Mom Sense, the podcast. I interview changemakers on their life lessons, legacy, and superpower of intuition, aka their mom sense and dad sense. I've had some pretty amazing parents on my show.
Hey, what's up? I'm Kelly Rowland.
Hi, this is Chelsea Clinton.
It's me, Bobby Brown. Can't wait to share my story.
Episodes release every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube. Join my tribe at thatstotalmomsense.com and follow me on Instagram at Kanika Chanda Gupta. I'm thrilled to be on this journey with you.
Welcome back to The Planted Runner and my conversation with Elizabeth Scott. Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought up singing a song and being conversational, because I personally find that your breathing is more indicative of zone two than anything your watch tells you, whether it's pace or heart rate. I ignore all those things. And if you can talk just as easily as we are talking right now, you are in the aerobic zone. Aerobic means with oxygen. It means you can breathe. And it means you can talk. It means you can sing. It means you can argue with your podcast. You know, it doesn't matter what your heart rate is. It does not matter unless it's too high. That's another thing that I look for as a coach. If someone's like, I had a great, easy run. It was amazing. And I look at the heart rate data and it's 180. And I'm like, might not have been so easy.
Yeah. I think with runners, we get into a place where we do a lot of wishful thinking on our run. Like we convince ourselves that, oh no, this feels easy. And in the back of our head, we're thinking, yeah, but maybe it's not. So that's why using something like the talk test, which is actually really closely correlated with those major thresholds. Mm-hmm. So if you're not interested in using heart rate, or as I like to recommend, even if you do use heart rate, you should also validate it with other ways of testing intensity. Like, okay, this is what it says that your heart rate, you know, top of your aerobic threshold might be. Let's say I always like to use a starting average of around 75%. So if we know our maximum heart rate, we know it. We've measured it. We've tested it. I say, okay, let's try 75% of your maximum heart rate as the top of that aerobic threshold. And then let's go see how it feels. Let's go see how it feels to run below or slightly above that heart rate, how it feels in your body, how it feels in your breathing, how it feels in your ability to sustain that effort. If your heart rate rises rapidly after a certain point in time. Because just using heart rate or just using any one single metric is missing the forest for the trees. You have all these tools at your disposal and you should use all of them to work in tandem, right? So I like to use heart rate in training as a way to help runners understand what things are supposed to feel like. Your heart rate is not something you're supposed to be glued to for the rest of your life. It is a training tool intended to teach you what different intensities feel like and help keep you honest on the days you need to be kept honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like looking at heart rate actually after the run, more so than during the run, because you know, the mere act of looking at your watch to see where your heart rate is can actually raise your heart rate, you know, and it can affect your run during the run. And it's more interesting to me to look at it afterward and be like, okay, my heart rate on easy runs over the past month is X. I'm starting to sense a pattern. I'm starting to see where trends are. I'm starting to understand what my body is doing when I do this type of run or that type of run. Versus in the moment, you know, you're trying to do your 200 meter repeats and you're like, oh God, my heart rate, it's too much going on, at least for me.
Yes, I rarely recommend and rarely do I use heart rate in workouts or in racing. Like you said, you know, there's so many factors that can influence how you're feeling, adrenaline, anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, although I do find it useful to use heart rate in an easy run, like, hey, am I easy? If not, I need to slow down. When we're doing things like a workout, marathon pace, half marathon pace, lactate threshold, speed work, checking heart rate, not helpful in the moment. Like you said, very helpful afterwards to say, all right, so how did that stack up, right? And then, like you said, gathering that data over time and drawing conclusions from multiple data points. But just because you're using heart rate in one aspect of your training doesn't mean that it's the same usefulness in other aspects of your training.
Yes, good point. Good point. And I do want to bring up that one thing that it is very helpful for is to spot trends in your heart. Like I have definitely had athletes who have noticed that their heart rate was spiking on a run that was purely easy and the trend started going up and up and up. They go to their doctor and realize they do have a health issue. So it can save your life. It really, really can.
Yeah. And I think this is the interesting thing about not freaking out if something is slightly anomalous, but understanding what's normal for you and then paying attention to it. So obviously, again, if you're using your watch to measure your heart rate and you're getting these random spikes, I obviously, if you have questions, go to the doctor. Like, don't mess around with your heart health. But also, we know that optical sensors are garbage. So if this is something that is a concern for you and you're, but it's not rising to the concern of, I need to call my cardiologist, be like, okay, we'll start accurately measuring your heart rate and then see if that trend still pops up. Actually, this happened with my dad. My dad's an endurance cyclist and he's in his 60s now. And he had been noticing that on some rides in the past 6 or 10 months that his heart rate every 10 or 15 minutes would kind of just like dip like 10 or 15 beats. And then kind of rise back up. And he was like, this is weird. And it's also, he's like, this isn't normal for me. I've been riding for 40 years. Like I've been using heart rate in my training for decades. Like this isn't normal. Went to the doctor. It turns out there was an issue, but it's not a problem, right? So understanding what's normal for you is really key. And then also, you know, making sure that you're making informed decisions about how to take care of your health from there. But it is interesting to think about what we can do with this data.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there are also some people who use heart rate to run at very, very low intensities, you know, the Maffetone method, things like that. So people are training their heart, assuming it's accurate, to run very, very slow. So I would say it's almost zone one kind of running. What are your feelings about that?
Yeah. So in principle, the Maffetone method, MAF training, is a form of what, Claire, you and I know as just the basics of how you should train and spending large amount of times in that low intensity subaerobic zone. The Maffetone method takes it to an extreme in that a large part of the way that he works with his athletes essentially saying for the first 6 months of doing this, you can't at all have your heart rate be above that age base. I think it's 180 minus your age threshold. We've already talked about the issues with age-based formulas. This one's no exception. I think for people who do follow the MAF method, it tends to be on the more conservative side, as in that it tends to have a lower threshold for what he's asking you to stay under than what your actual aerobic threshold might be. So it's a way of keeping you ultra super honest in that zone. It's not for everybody. It has its drawbacks, but it is essentially the same principle in that staying in this intensity zone as measured by heart rate for large parts of your training.
Okay. So we've already discussed that, you know, certain numbers don't apply to everyone. We haven't talked about one factor that the numbers might apply for everyone, and that's resting heart rate. So resting heart rate before you get out of bed, that can be a really important indicator of health and fitness. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, one of the kind of misconceptions I get for people when they use resting heart rate in training is assuming that resting heart rate is something you can use to set up your intensity zones. And you can't. You can't say, well, my resting heart rate's 55. What's my zone two? That's not how that works. Intensity zones are based on the maximal ability, right? So you, all of your zones, no matter what method that you're using, they're based on your maximal ability to do something. Your resting heart rate is a measurement of what your heart rate beats at rest. Now, resting heart rate is most accurately measured when you wake up first thing in the morning, Claire, like you said, not what your quote unquote resting heart rate is during the day. Because unless you're just in Shavasana for 8 hours during the workday, right? You are up and about, you're moving, you're talking, you're working, you're doing all these things. And although you may not be running, you're not at rest in the way that you are when you're sleeping. Resting heart rate can be a very valuable tool tracked over time to understand essentially, one, a measure of your aerobic fitness in that as we become fitter, our resting heart rate tends to decline. And that can be a very good thing, but it can also point out anomalies in areas where we might want to pay more attention to, because for some people, actually having a resting heart rate that's too low, especially for women, can be an indicator of low energy availability or relative energy deficiency in sport. Conversely, if you're having your resting heart rate is rising, right? That could also be an indicator of relative energy deficiency sport or overtraining syndrome or some underlying health condition. So tracking that over time can also be a really helpful tool. And like you said, that's easily measured first thing in the morning. My watch gives me a 4-hour rolling average. So that's what I note first thing in the morning. Like I'll wake up and be like, oh, my resting heart rate this morning was 57. Yesterday was 52 and today it's 53. Like, you know, right. But again, we're looking for trends. We're looking for trends over time in that.
So are you wearing your chest strap at night when you go to bed?
That's something you can pretty much rely on your optical sensor. I don't mean to crap all over optical sensors for everything because they are very useful. They are most accurate when you're not running.
Right.
It's running specifically. It is the high impact, striking the ground nature of that is what disrupts your optical sensor's ability to accurately observe heart rate while running. This does not mean your optical sensor is similarly inaccurate at rest or at lower intensity or lower impact forms of exercise. It's something that is just, unfortunately, not going to be most accurate for runners while we're running.
Exactly. And how tight you put it on and if you have clothes underneath. Some of them are affected by sweat. I think they're getting better at that than they used to be. But it's, you know, there's some user error there too.
Yeah, there are things that can make it more or less likely that it can be accurate. And it's also very frustrating because it's your watch may not always be inaccurate all the time, even within the same run. Like I've had runs where my watch has started out like accurate, and I know it is, and then something will happen and then it'll get cadence locked and I'm cadence locked for the rest of the run. Or conversely, maybe my watch is a little bit too loose, so I'm cadence locked to start and I tighten it down and all of a sudden it can actually measure and read my heart rate accurately. But yes, there are other things, skin tone. We tend to see people who have darker skin or pigmented skin. Maybe you have a tattoo or just more melanin, tend to be less accurate because again, it's optical. Mm. It sees into your skin. Vein placement, where you wear your watch. If it's on the underside of your wrist, not going to be accurate. If it's like on the bony part of your wrist, not going to be as accurate. So there are some other factors there that can make it that your watch is more or less accurate. But again, still not going to be as accurate as a chest strap or armband.
Mm-hmm. And I think there are some people, you know, who are also worried. We talked about the lower end, but back up to the higher end. I think there are some people, especially as we age, that are afraid of their heart rate going too high. You know, maybe they figure out the formula and they figure out their max heart rate and they say, ooh, I don't want to get my heart rate above X. They're worried about that. Can you discuss some of that?
Yeah, of course, if you have any restrictions on exercise intensity as given to you by your physician or cardiologist, they're your default, not us coaches on the internet.
Right.
But the point about being a well-rounded athletic person, whether you are somebody who really just runs a 5K every couple of months for fun, or maybe you're really seriously racing marathons or ultras or trying to go to the Olympic trials, whatever it is, you are going to be best served in your athletic endeavors by exercising at a range of intensities. Mm. So low, moderate, and high intensity. Now, you should not be spending all your time in the highest intensity zone possible.
Right.
That's a really great way to get burned out and injured really, really quickly. But yeah, you should be challenging yourself at those higher intensities on a relatively regular basis, whether that's something like strides or surges in your training or hill sprints, or even structured workouts that contain speed work. Don't be afraid of it. Be afraid of spending all of your time there.
Yes. At all the zones. Don't spend all your time in any of the zones. Just a little bit at the high zone.
All these zones are, think of them like a meal, right? Like you wouldn't have a meal made of just one single thing. That's not a meal. A meal contains a bunch of different things. And so that's how your training should look. And depending on what you're training for, your meal may be comprised of more low intensity or a slightly more high intensity or more moderate intensity. But all of those elements are going to be present all the time in different proportions.
Okay. So to kind of wrap it all up, bring it full circle, if somebody, after hearing this, wants to train by heart rate, what are your best tips for getting started?
Yeah. So number one, wear an accurate measurement device. Okay. It is worth investing in a chest strap or an armband because it's going to be cheaper than your watch and a new pair of shoes.
Right.
It is, again, if this is something that you genuinely want to use, investing in a tool, $75, $100, well worth the investment. So get something that you know is going to be accurately measuring your heart rate. Two, you're going to want to then look and see what's my maximum heart rate. Or looking back through historical data, if you raced in the past 6 to 12 months, what the highest your heart rate has been during these maximal efforts. More than one data point is always better. So you can kind of get an idea of where that falls. And then looking and saying, all right, based on this information, you know, what does this tell me about where I think the average of my zones would be on average? So although we can't use age-based averages for estimating individual maximal heart rate, we can still comfortably apply, okay, on average, we tend to see an aerobic threshold that's this percent of max heart rate and a lactate threshold that tends to be this percent of max heart rate. So I like to start, like I said, with my athletes putting the top of their zone two or their aerobic threshold around 75% of their maximum heart rate, and then seeing how that feels. How does it feel in training? Can you converse easily at or below that heart rate? Can you converse easily at or above that heart rate? Where does that indicate about where your heart rate may need to be a little bit higher, a little bit lower than you think it should be? And then test, retest, be curious, and also remember that heart rate is simply your guide, not your God. And if using heart rate in training is causing you anxiety about keeping your heart rate low, it's not going to be the right tool for everybody. So just because your best friend and that Olympian that you really admire use it in training doesn't mean it's going to be the best tool for you, and that's okay.
Exactly. And it's a moving target. Once you figure all this out, it's going to change as you get fitter. Or if you take a break, it might go the other direction. It's always a moving target. So something to keep an eye on, perhaps, but know its limitations.
Exactly. And every so often, you will need to retest that maximum heart rate because it may change, like I said, as we age. And this is more about, I think, a bigger lesson about running in general is that, you know, so often I feel like runners just want to be told exactly what to do so they can get the results that they're like want to be guaranteed results. But running is really about an exploration of what's going on under the hood and adjusting and adapting and being curious and saying, okay, my heart rate was higher on today's easy run than it normally is. How's my sleep? How's my stress? Am I dehydrated? Instead of assuming or assigning blame, something's wrong or it's wrong or I'm wrong, it allows you to be curious about the holistic environment that you are training in and really helping you develop those skills that will allow you to perform at your best as an athlete on whatever the given day is.
Exactly. I love it. It's just another tool in our toolbox, one of many. Well, Elizabeth, this has been great. Tell everybody where they can find you. And I think you have, don't you have a masterclass on heart rate? Tell everybody about that.
Yeah. So you can find me at Running Explained on Instagram, primarily on Instagram, the Running Explained podcast, which Claire, you've been a guest on several times as well. So yes, I do have a masterclass about how to use heart rate and training as a runner, because this is something that I get so many questions about. So we go through understanding how heart rate is used as a proxy of intensity, the different types of heart rate zone models, kind of a history of all of this, the science behind the different basic zones, and then the most common models and testing methods to get you started in using heart rate in training that doesn't assume a bunch of stuff based on your watch's age-based formula, but something that is actionable that you can actually use in your training that you know is specific to you.
Perfect. Well, I'll have all of that in our show notes so people can reach out if they want more information. Well, it's always a pleasure chatting with you, Elizabeth. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Claire.
And now it's time for the Mental Strength Minute. Fortify your mind in 60 seconds or less. Today's topic is amnesia every mile. In long distance racing, you are typically holding back your effort for most of the race. The end is where the racing really starts, when your legs are already tired. But if you focus on how long you've just run, the will to speed up even more will get harder and harder. A good mind trick is to have amnesia every mile. In a 5K, for example, once you get past mile one, forget about it and start the second mile imagining you're just as fresh as the first. After the second mile, pretend you're in a 1 mile race and you're just at the beginning. When we forget about how hard we've just worked and simply focus on the mile that we're in, the race becomes manageable and our goals become more achievable. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to The Planted Runner, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Don't forget that you can win free access to one of my Sprint Session masterclasses just for writing an Apple Podcast review. So be sure to write yours right after your run today. Reviews are the number one way to boost this show's reach, and it's a great way to tell me what you'd like to hear next because I read every single one. Have a great run today.
Hear Her Sports is a podcast for everyone who loves stories by and about women striving to improve and make a difference in their lives. I am your host, Elizabeth Emery, a former professional cyclist. In every episode, I introduce a female athlete or woman in the business of sport through a thoughtful conversation about who they are and the terrific work they're doing. My guests and I explore the glorious and frustrating issues in sports, history, equity, training, nutrition, and so much more. Join us for inspiration, for community, and for love of being a strong athletic woman.